Shamanism, although it defies an exact definition, is often thought of as the ancient art of healing people by entering an altered state of consciousness. It is probably the most ancient form of religion, practiced in cultures all over the world for thousands of years, and today it's enjoying a resurgence. You'll find the word shaman surfacing in all kinds of fields, from journalism to nutrition, offering a new way to connect to a more powerful and authentic self. There are workshops, therapy sessions, seminars, and shamanic healing trips to the Amazon. There are blogs for urban shaman moms and shaman girls. In 2012, a California man created the Shamanic Juice Fast. And recently, the New York Times Magazine described a popular Atlanta chef as a vegetable shaman. Today, we're going to talk about why shamanism is so popular today and why it's relevant to our modern world. We're joined by two experts of the South American shamanic tradition. Joining us from his home in Chicago is Steve Beyer, author of Singing to the Plants, a guide to mestizo shamanism in the Upper Amazon. And with us in the studio is Don Oscar Miro Queseda, author of the new book Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life. He's a practicing healer and the founder of the Heart of the Healer Foundation, based in North Carolina. Welcome to both of you to Interfaith Voices.
Thank you, Maureen.
Yes,
pleasure
thank
to be
you.
Here.
Now, first, and I'm going to start with you, Steve, how do you define shamanism? And in the midst of that, do you call yourself a shaman?
Well, I'll answer the second question first, and the answer is no, absolutely not, not even close. If shamanism is an ocean, I am standing on the beach, and the water comes up and touches the tip of my toe. I would hesitate to define it. As you said, it defies definition. What we tend to do is to project onto the figure of the shaman what we as a culture are in need of at the time. We see the shaman as a cultural resistor, as a healer, as a master of ecstasy, as a kind of primitive psychotherapist, as an embodiment of indigenous wisdom. And each of the definitions that I've seen is really a projection of our own cultural needs and values on the other. And I think that what we need to do is to look instead at what shamans in particular cultures do and the kinds of social roles that they fill in those cultures as healers and finders of lost objects and locators of game and practitioners of sorcery and all the other functions that shamans fulfill in different cultures.
And Oscar, I'm sure we have a number of listeners who are not familiar with shamanism. Can you come close to a definition?
Certainly. Let us begin with a bridge, which is linguistic. The term samang is of a Tungusic Siberian origin and was popularized by Mircea Eliade in his classic Shamanism, Archaic Techniques of Ecstasy. He defines shamans as technicians of the sacred. I would disagree with that. I consider shamans artists of the soul. And for me, shamanism is about restoring an experience of soul to one's own human fabric, to one's own human presence. And therefore, it can take a myriad of forms and expressions. Yet, ultimately, shamanism is an inherent human expression of deep caring, of love, of compassion, which began the first time one of our nomadic ancestors reached out to heal or help another who was suffering. So it's a very broad complex of techniques, but also of artistry.
Would you call it the original religion, then, of all human beings? Some people have suggested, for example, that cave paintings from almost prehistoric times were the spiritual art of early humans.
Yes, as long as religion is defined not as an organized system of dogma, yet as a experience of transcendence, a religio, a linking back to the source. In that sense, you could somewhat comfortably say that shamanism is the primordial religion. Yet ultimately, it's about interaction with spirits, interaction with sacred dimensions of life that usually remain distant from our modern Western mindset. Mm. And that's why the resurgence today is something that I feel has great evolutionary potential for humankind as a whole.
But as we mentioned in the beginning, there seems to be a renewed interest right now in shamanism. And Steve, I'm wondering if you, why do you think that is?
I'm old enough to remember when Zen Buddhism was going to save the world. And I'm certainly old enough to remember when LSD was going to save the world. And I'm old enough to remember when we were entering the age of Aquarius and when Tibetan Buddhism was going to save the world. I think Americans have very, very short attention spans. And I think there are always people who are interested in the new and the exotic and the other. And I think this is part of it. I think it's part of a romanticization of indigenous cultures. And I think that it's another way of people trying to find themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are they toss the word shaman or shamanism into just about anything because it fits a current meme. Remember that things do not cross borders into vacuums. When shamanism crosses borders into American culture, there are pre-existing cultural niches that shamanism will need to adapt to and change over time, but it is being absorbed into a pre-existing culture that consists of a whole number of pre-existing conceptions about the nature of healing, the nature of human suffering, the nature of spirituality, rather than into a vacuum.
Oscar, I know you've been a practicing healer for many years. Can you take us through a typical healing ceremony? Like, what does it look like? What do you do, at least briefly?
Well, my particular path of healing service is known as Kamaska, K-A-M-A-S-K-A, which is a Quechua term which means creation or creative power. So the Kamaska curandero or the Kamaska healing tradition involves what we call mesadas, which are all-night healing sessions that focus on an altar ground that has the embodiment of the most ancestral wisdom teachings and powers and forces derived from the natural world, together with all types of plant, animal, and human-made ritual objects. And when it is combined with the sacramental use of the San Pedro cactus in a very formal ritual manner, it allows access to that crack between the worlds. It allows the opening of the doors of perception and allows the healer and his assistants or her assistants to raise the consciousness of those who are coming for healing.
What comes from that cactus that you described here that somebody drinks or eats, I'm not quite sure which, is that, what kind of an effect does that have on the person? Does that alter their state of mind in some way?
Well, at the risk of sounding reductionistic, I don't want to talk about the alkaloid, but the alkaloid is a mescaline-based alkaloid of this cactus. So if you understand mescaline to be a very powerful psycho mimetic or psychoactive substance, it allows you to start seeing behind what we call the veil. Yet I prefer to speak of the spirit of the cactus, the consciousness of the cactus, the awareness of the cactus. And when you enter into that relationship of a conscious, pulsing, living being, then the alkaloid is secondary. It becomes your ally. It becomes your shamanic helper.
And I see that you've brought with you today one of the ceremonial objects that you use in your healing ceremonies, given to you, I believe, by your mentor. And I wonder if you could describe that for us, Oscar, and tell us how you use it.
So what I have brought, Stephen, and the listening audience, is my Misarumi, which is the centerpiece of the altar that I use, which is a 1,200 B.C. Chaving, which is a central highland Andean culture that's the cradle of Peruvian curanderismo, the Chaving culture, and it's a pistol that has etchings of the San Pedro deity on it, and which is a combination of an eagle, a jaguar, and a serpent. And this pistol was used with a mortar to pulverize some dry seeds of the family of the Ananthera columbrina, which is a hallucinogenic snuff, and it is the center pole of my mesa, the cosmic tree, the ladder that unites all three worlds, the celestial or superior, the middle or this earthly realm, and the inner or the more shadowy realms.
But on top of that pestle is what looks to me like a very small bowl, and I know you poured some liquid into it. I wished our listeners could smell the studio. There is an absolutely wonderful aroma coming forth. Can you say what's
certainly
in there?
To be able to activate its healing grace, we anoint it with water from what we call a seguro, which is sacred herbs collected from the most revered lake of our tradition. So that is combined with perfumes and aromas and seeds, and it's poured inside of an Inca cup that has the double-headed serpent. And it's a very artful, very aesthetic, and graceful process.
And Steve, now both of you come out of the South American tradition, which many people associate with shamanism. So why are the Amazon and Peru so popular right now? I'm wondering, can't you find shamanic traditions? Apparently you can in Siberia. You've both mentioned that. Or even in Milwaukee or Baltimore.
Oh, Steve? I think that's absolutely right. If people are interested in shamanic traditions, there are shamanic communities and shamanic practitioners just about everywhere. There are Korean and Thai and Hmong and Chinese shamans that people can visit for healing or whatever purpose they're interested in. I think part of the attraction of Peru is, in fact, that many people, I think, are less interested in shamanism as a sacred community and are less interested in being in right relationship with others and with the spirits than they are interested in drinking San Pedro or ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm. And that's ayahuasca tea that you're talking about.
Yes.
And these are liquids that can be mind-altering, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they have psychoactive effects. And I think that a large part of what is driving spiritual tourism to Peru is curiosity about the effects of these two psychoactive substances, whose effects I really should emphasize, I think, are very different.
Oscar, how would you?
I would concur, of course. Ayahuasca is propels you beyond the self rather quickly, while San Pedro gradually deepens you into an experience of body and world, as well as opens your vision for divination, diagnosis, and other ritual healing acts. Yet they are two totally different medicines, in my experience. In ayahuasca, if someone knocks on the door, there's no one home. And with San Pedro, there's still somebody who will answer the door, if you get my drift.
Yes, I think I understand. And Steve, I'm wondering about the marketing of shamanism today. Have you seen some patterns in the way that it is marketed? I know you've noticed some trends in book titles lately.
I did a survey of titles of books about shamanism, and one thing that struck me was how many of these book titles had the word power in their title.
Why do you think that is?
I think because it's not so much that Westerners have lost their spiritual bearings so much as they are experiencing a sense of powerlessness, and the popularizers of shamanism, I think, try to speak to that and speak about shamanism as a way of somehow getting control of your life. And there's no reason to think that it doesn't, but I think this is part of the marketing that is used. It's being marketed to a particular demographic.
And what's that demographic?
Well, you know, people who perhaps work jobs where they feel they have very little say in how their work is managed and what work they do. I think there are people who feel that they are trapped in a sterile suburban environment. And I think the marketing of shamanism combines two things: this notion that somehow you will be able to gain a personal power, and it relies on the romanticization of the indigenous. And I think romanticizing the indigenous does real indigenous people a grave injustice.
Totally.
And Oscar, what would you have to add to that?
Well, I have the same concerns. I feel that in Peru there's an accelerated level of offering these plant-induced shamanic experiences by people who are totally unqualified. And it has become so commercial, it is the antithesis of what the true maestros and maestros would want for their tradition.
The teachers of
that.
The
teachers, yes. So I'm concerned with the direction it's going.
And I wondered if each of you could leave us with a final thought about shamanism. What's at the core of shamanism for you, Steve?
I agree with what was said here. As I have looked at indigenous cultures, what seems to me to lie at the core is a deep concern with being in right relationship. And this means not only being in right relationship with the members of the group, but also being in right relationship with the spirits that fill the indigenous universe. This means being in right relationship with the animals, with the plants, with the trees, with the rocks, with stars, with thunder, all of whom are persons.
And that would lead one to a right relationship with the earth itself and preserving the earth and its beauty.
Again, you know, we live in a culture where we think about, you know, the wilderness as opposed to where we live. But for indigenous people, up until fairly recently, there was no distinction. They lived in the wilderness. And the idea of there being a threatened earth, I think, is not something that you find particularly in indigenous culture. I think the I think, a better way to think about the ways in which indigenous cultures generally relate is because they see their environment as filled with other than human persons with whom they have to maintain a correct cultural relationship and with whom they are able to communicate through songs and ceremonies and dreams.
And Oscar, what's at the core of shamanism for you?
Well, ditto to everything that Stephen has said. And the principle of Aini, A-Y-N-I, which can be defined as sacred reciprocity. In other words, the shamanic life way is based on right relationship that is one of balance between how much we receive and how much we give. And that is the ethos of the Andean, coastal, and Amazonian peoples. The understanding that to be of service to one's own self and to one's family and community and the environment as a whole, one needs to live a conscious life in which things are kept in balance. So the way we envision soul in our world is so important. By soul, I don't mean anything that can be defined other than it's that moment being transformed by an awe-inspiring sunset, that soul, being able to walk hand in hand with your beloved, that soul, that sense of belongingness is the essence of shamanic living.
Don Oscar Miro Quesada is the author of a new book, Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life. And Steve Beyer is the author of Singing to the Plants, A Guide to Mestizo Shamanism in the Upper Amazon. Thank you both for joining us today.
It was a pleasure.
It was. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
To see a picture of Don Oscar in our studio with his ceremonial pestle, visit us at interfaithradio.org.